The momentum for women's basketball continues as the basketball world watched the WNBA draft and is excited for the WNBA season. We welcome the Wall Street Journal's Rachel Bachman onto Hoopsology to discuss how Caitlin Clark has affected the dynamic for the upcoming WNBA season, expectations for when she plays in the Olympics, the future of Dawn Staley at South Carolina, and a lot more. Rachel was a fantastic guest, and her insight was greatly appreciated as really not only the basketball world, but the sports world is excited not only to see what Caitlin Clark does, but as well as this 2024 draft class for the WNBA. Hoopsology is presented by Ball is Life, and now, Rachel Bachman. She is a senior sports reporter for the Wall Street Journal, focusing on the Olympics, college sports, and the business and finance of women's sports. We have the pleasure in welcoming Rachel Bachman onto Hoopsology. Welcome, Rachel.
Thanks so much, Justin. Great to be here.
Thanks for joining the show. Really appreciate it. Really enjoyed your coverage, just breaking down everything that's been going on with women's sports. And just for our viewers, as best you can, and forgive me for this question, it might be kind of a doozy, but everything that's going on with women's sports, starting with Caitlin Clark, to kind of a bridge we have into the next phase of kind of this wave of momentum that we've seen just with the women's Final Four to the WNBA draft. Can you kind of summarize like your observations in terms of what you saw in the women's Final Four to what fans could see in terms of the WNBA draft and beyond?
Yeah, well, a lot of people might be wondering, especially sort of casual fans who might have just tuned in to see Caitlin Clark in the last year or even few weeks, why now? You know, why this big explosion now? Of course, she's a great player. That's number one. But there have been some things that have happened in recent years that kind of set the stage for this. If you remember in 2021, there was a viral video contrasting the weight rooms at the women's tournament and the men's tournament that measly set up, and the men had this vast complex. That triggered a review by the NCAA, and actually an exterior review that they hired a law firm to do, and spurred some changes, more investment. The broadcasters, ESPN and ABC, started putting some of the games on bigger platforms. The women's final was on ABC last year for the first time. It was again on ABC this year. So a lot of things changed to sort of elevate the game, more games on television, so that when a great star like Caitlin Clark came along, people could watch her easily. And, you know, it was not hard to find her. And so here we are, the women's final drew 18.9 million viewers, which is 4 million more than the men's final, and the first time ever that the women's final has outdrawn the men's final. So it's really an unprecedented moment we're in. And Monday, Caitlin Clark is almost certain to be the number one pick in the WNBA draft and go to the Indiana Fever. And there's every anticipation that she will have a lifting effect on audiences in the WNBA as well.
So in your opinion, what has been lacking in the coverage specifically with ESPN, with, I guess, women's college basketball and the WNBA? Correct me if I'm wrong, I've watched a lot of the women's tournament and the coverage. I thought it was phenomenal in terms of this breaking down every single game. Even kind of the smaller conferences with HBCUs, I thought that coverage was great, all the way up to Caitlin Clark. So what seemed to be the difference? Because I've been known to criticize just the coverage of the WNBA on ESPN, and specifically during the pandemic, compared to the men's game in terms of what coverage viewers get when watching the NBA. What do you think is the difference? And do you think this upgrade in coverage is here to stay for viewers?
I think the short answer is yes. And primarily because they're making money from it, right? I mean, the ratings go up. That means they can charge more for advertising. And so they're going to give us more of it, right? So in terms of the college game, 2021 was also the first time that every women's tournament game was broadcast nationally. So you could get any game nationally. That I think that happened on the men's side maybe 10 years or so earlier. So that was a catch up. The WNBA, you know, gradually has had more games televised as well. They've got a number of partners. So it's not solely ESPN, it's a number of them. And that's going to increase. I mean, they're working on a new TV deal, and they've had a couple of new partners in recent years as well. So that you're going to see broader coverage. One thing we saw with the college tournament was more pregame shows and more just sort of, you know, around the game's coverage, which I think was really welcome because we get a lot of that on the men's side, not so much on the women's side. And I thought the studio team on the women's side was phenomenal. I mean,
agreed.
Very different from the men's side, you know, younger, all female on the desk. And so it just has a very different feel of the men's tournament, but you know, most of them are former players. They really know what they're talking about and they just have a lot of fun. I mean, I had so many people, you know, saying on social media, like, I love this group and, you know, it's like hang out with your friends. And so I think that is going to serve the tournament really well. I hope they try to keep that team together going forward because I think it really made an impression this time around.
Your commentary just really popped in my mind that ESPN, I think for years for their NBA coverage, have been searching for the equivalency of inside the NBA. I think they might have found it with this women's coverage. Do you see them taking kind of this format and translating it to the WNBA? Like, what is the next level in terms of coverage? So obviously, Caitlin Clark's going number one. We've seen, I believe, the Las Vegas Aces switch venues for when they play the Indiana Fever. Do you see ESPN kind of following suit in terms of their coverage, in terms of seeing kind of an upgrade? Because I noticed with on the NBA side, that's always been kind of a point of contention, is kind of getting their studio coverage right. They've never seemed to hit it, but it seems they struck gold here with their women's college basketball coverage. Do you see kind of a same upgrade for the WNBA when the season starts in a couple of months?
Well, I think that's a great idea because inside the NBA is just appointment viewing, right? I mean, that's such a great chemistry. That desk is fantastic. And I don't know whether there's something similar playing in the W, but I think fans would respond really well. There's some really, I mean, those women are very funny. There's other funny women who are either in the league or around it who might be good candidates too. So I think that's a great idea, actually. One of the challenges for the W, and this is a challenge, actually, this is going to sound strange, but it's a challenge for Major League Soccer as well. And that is that both leagues are relatively new compared with, you know, the NBA, the NFL, et cetera, Major League Baseball, certainly. And that's a challenge. It takes a really long time to establish leagues, no matter if it's men or women or no matter the sport. One huge advantage that college sports have had, and I would say even including women's sports, is they operate in these gigantic brand spaces. So for instance, University of Iowa is more than a century old brand, you know, South Carolina or Michigan or Ohio State, Notre Dame. These are brands everybody knows, everybody understands them to some extent. And so you don't have to explain to people what the stakes are, right? They know the national championship, they know these schools. Not everybody knows all the W teams, you know, some of them are relatively new. And so that is an ongoing challenge to the casual fan, like explaining who the teams are, the rivals, everything. And I think that, you know, having a already bankable star in Caitlin Clark, who just sort of like took off like a rocket, is going to be a big advantage to storytelling in the W.
So what do you expect once she gets into the league? I know there's been some criticism in terms of how her impact will have on the W when the season starts. Do you think her impact will be immediate? Like, what are you expecting? Not only from her, but we've seen Angel Reese is going to be in the draft. It seems like this draft's pretty loaded with a lot of different stars, not just Caitlin Clark. What are your expectations for this season from just on the floor and maybe just from a coverage perspective, especially because the Aces have been so dominant. And now you add this very potential superstar player into the mix as well.
Yeah. Well, I think already we're seeing the coverage is going to be pretty intense. I was on a media call today with some ESPN personalities about the draft, and there were more than 100 people on that call.
Oh, wow.
Now, I don't think that's typical. Like, that's very atypical. And I think a lot of that's Caitlin Clark. Now, there are other big players, as you mentioned, Angel Reese, Cameron Brink, and others, Camilla Cardozo, yeah, who are also entering this draft. And so that's another really fascinating thing. There are several players who are really known in basketball who are entering the league at the same time. And that will be fantastic because now it's not just Caitlin Clark. I mean, she's going to play against these players. She'll play against Angel Reese's team and Camilla's team and so on. And that can only help the storytelling too from people who might have wandered over from the college game. So as far as how well Caitlin will do, I think, you know, no question defenses are going to be tougher. I think some vets in the W are sort of salivating at the chance to sort of humble her a little bit with all the attention she's gotten. And that's, you know, that's all good. That's all part of the game. And so I think time will tell how she adjusts. You know, if she can nail logo threes, I mean, those, as we've seen, are very difficult to defend. And also she's, you know, she's one of the best passers in history. And so if she can maintain even some of that into the W, you know, she'll make her teammates better and she'll facilitate the offense. And of course, as we know, Indiana needs some help. And so I think that if she can even maintain like 75% of her skill, she'll be in really good position to kind of adjust and grow, you know, as the seasons move on.
So I want to shift back to just the women's tournament, focus on South Carolina. Super dominant, Dawn Staley developing a huge legacy. Where does she go from here? Do you see a transition with just the popularity of her staying in college, developing like a Coach K legacy at South Carolina? Or do you think her coaching future lies in the pros or with the WNBA or the NBA? Like, where do you kind of see her trajectory?
You know, I think she could do almost anything she wanted. So if she wants to go there and, you know, take aim at Geno's 11 championships, I mean, she's already got three of them, right? So, and she's young, so for a coach. And so if she wanted to do that, she certainly could. She seems to have recruiting figured out there, right? She's getting the players she wants and she also gets them to stay. That's the other thing. I mean, you know, the Oregon State coach, after they lost to South Carolina in the Elite Eight, said, you know, South Carolina has two starting lineups. And that is an incredibly tough team to beat, right? When your second five can basically beat most other teams in the country. So, you know, it's really up to her. I don't know whether she wants to, you know, tackle new worlds or new challenges, but she could stay in South Carolina and, you know, presumably just keep racking up titles there if she wanted to.
Can you discuss the effect of NIL in regards to popularity, since now a lot of college players, they're seen throughout these brands, which I assume increases their popularity as well. They're more visible to more of a casual audience. Can you kind of speak to how NIL, just from a popularity for women's college basketball in future years, will have an effect on the game?
I think that's had an enormous effect already, and particularly on the women's side. And the reason is because of the pro draft rules. Mm-hmm. So of course, NBA players, they can, you know, college players on the men's side can go after 1 year, 1 year out of high school, they can go pro. In the W, they have to wait 4 years. And what this does is basically force players to create brands and get better and do all these things that, you know, the male players used to do decades ago and don't do so much anymore because of all the money waiting for them in the league. But it's had an enormous effect. I mean, I'll give you an example. So Caitlin Clark, you know, of course, has all these endorsements with big brands. State Farm is one of her sponsors. They've just announced that they're going to basically light up Times Square with her records, photos of her, of her before the draft. And, you know, that's money that the W doesn't have to spend marketing the league, marketing a player. It's because it's being handled by a sponsor. So there's this incredible multiplying effect from sponsors of promoting players and promoting the game that doesn't cost them anything. And because women stay in college longer than men generally, they're very attractive to brands because they can build name recognition around them, you know? Players, I mean, as you've seen, I mean, there's a poll by Seton Hall University recently that found that four of the six most recognized players by the general public, not by sports fans, were women this year in college basketball. And Caitlin Clark was far and away number one. Almost half of the general population knew that she was a college basketball player. And that is like, I mean, that's household name status, and she's not even pro yet. So I think a lot of that has to do with just being everywhere, like professional athletes are everywhere because they're also in commercials.
Can you explain why this criticism is occurring of, for instance, Caitlin Clark's going to lose money by going to the WNBA in regards to endorsements? I don't really understand that. I just think, you know, these brands are happy to continue the relationship with her and others like her in the WNBA draft and beyond, but yet there's this like fear of, well, they're missing out on all this money. They're at a deficit by going pro. That doesn't really make any sense. Do you know why this criticism is happening, or is there any Cat Americas? I don't really understand why there's even this debate of these players going pro and all of a sudden they lose these brand endorsement deals.
Yeah, I think, well, there is a huge misperception, as you point out, particularly with her. I think if she was just totally a mercenary and was going to put herself up to the highest bidder, yes, maybe a school would pay, you know, $5 million for her to pay some, you know, play somewhere next year. But yeah, she grew up in Iowa. She went to Iowa. And in fact, a lot of people don't know this, but she did not accept any money from Iowa's collective. Wow. And I actually interviewed the CEO of Iowa's collective and said, you know, why do you think that is? And he said, I think it's just small potatoes compared to what she's getting from endorsements. Mm. So she didn't even bother to ask them for money. So to me, that says that she's not in this primarily for the money. She will make a lot of money. She is making a lot of money, but she wasn't going to offer herself up to the highest bidder. She wasn't even doing that at Iowa. And so, and at the same time, I did talk to the brand, the biggest brands representing her, you know, weeks ago, and they all said, we're staying with her to the W, we have multi-year contracts, things like that. And in fact, since then, since she announced, she's signed more brand deals. And so there's no question she's going to make more, just as a matter of fact, in the W, primarily from endorsements, than she made in college.
So can you kind of outline what is the future of the WNBA specifically? You mentioned that their TV deal is up. What do you think is the best path for the WNBA moving forward in regards to wide visibility of fans? Because you, as we saw with just the Women's College Basketball Tournament, huge ratings. And, you know, we're in this era of streaming. Some people are watching on their phones, tablets, and as well as home or sports bars, whatever. From a WNBA standpoint, do you think they have the same framework as the NBA in terms of just selling certain parts of kind of their calendar? For instance, the Commissioner's Cup, the playoffs, mm-hmm. kind of the different, you know, streamers out there? Or do you think we'll see a more streamlined? What do you think is kind of their path forward? Do you think, are they kind of, want to say they use the same playbook as the NBA, or they kind of a package deal? Like, how do you think their streaming rights are going to go?
Well, there's a couple of questions here. One is the question of whether the WNBA will offer its rights along with the NBA as they've done in the past. And I don't know whether that's been determined for certain yet. And there's pluses and minuses to that. One of the downsides to women's sports properties being bundled with other properties is that you never really know exactly how much they're worth, you know, because they're not being sold separately. So that's one downside. But the upside, of course, is you got this huge might of the NBA, which has a lot of bargaining power with these broadcasters and streamers. I think it's likely that the W, regardless of that question, I think it's likely that the W will continue to be on multiple channels, just because that's what a lot of leagues are doing. And that is a way to balance maximizing revenue, because streamers often really want a piece of these games because they're valuable. They can get subscriptions from people for them, but also the exposure that like broadcast networks will give you. So, yeah. Or even cable networks like ESPN. So you see a lot of leagues balancing both of those things. I mean, the NFL has done this increasingly, as you've seen. They're on everything from Amazon Prime to broadcast. So it's annoying to viewers, but that is really a way for these leagues to maximize, you know, the revenue and the accessibility for fans, because they really need both to keep growing as a league.
So do you think the fans' annoyance will turn into frustration and the loss of viewership, or do you think they'll just adapt like everything? As we heard a lot of complaints about the NFL with the wild card game being on Peacock, but yet it got monster ratings. And it seems like if fans really want to see something, they might complain, but ultimately they're going to watch what they're going to see. So do you think it'll just be a quibble from fans, or do you think it might materialize into, you know, lower ratings, just depending on which streamer they're going to be on possibly?
I think it depends on how good the product and how compelling the product is. So if Caitlin Clark really has it going and these other new players and the veterans are really putting on a show, I think people will pony up. I mean, I'm a Michigan football fan, and the first game this season, last season, was on Peacock. People grumbled about it, but I tell you what, everybody signed up because nobody wanted to miss even one game. And so if someone's really a Caitlin Clark fan or a New York Liberty fan or whatever, They're going to pony up where they need to get these games so they can see them. But the W is going to have to deliver, you know, it's going to have to put on a show, and there'll be even more pressure on Caitlin Clark to, you know, give spectacular performances to sort of keep this, this mania going.
So what is put on a show in your definition? Because I've heard a lot of fans, some fans like parody, some fans like dominant teams. We've seen basically Aces looks like they might be building a dynasty. What does that look like? Would you like to see a lot of parity, a lot of teams even, or would you like to see a lot of separation, lots of power teams dominate while maybe you see the negative would be that a lot of teams possibly struggling? Like, what is the best for the WNBA?
I think the best possible outcome is close games. So close games keep people watching longer. They keep every fan base interested longer. You know, the games are more compelling. There's more drama. And so even if, say, the Aces always end up winning, it's great for them and for the league if the games are close. Yeah. And so that's why you have, you know, of course, that's why leagues have salary caps and they have, you know, draft rules that try to even things out so that, you know, this is why the Aces are not getting the number one pick, right? Like, they don't need it. So, but the Fever does. So I think that is the best outcome. You know, dynasties can be great. I think what we saw in women's college basketball is at a certain point, I think dynasties hurt the casual viewership because, you know, when UConn really had it rolling, I mean, they were knocking over teams by 40 points, and that there's just no drama to that. So I think it's much more compelling now where you have UConn, still a great team, but the games were close and they were, you know, I mean, it was terrible. They had so many injuries, but it was incredible what they were doing with 6-7 players, you know, and that was it. So I think that is much more compelling. And you see, you know, even though South Carolina is a dominant team and a dominant program, you know, the games at the end of the tournament were still pretty close, and that's ideal. You know, nobody wanted a blowout in the final, and it wasn't a blowout. And that was the reason why the rating was so great, because it really was close until the fourth quarter.
So last question for you. I want to ask about Caitlin Clark and her involvement in the Olympics and that effect. What do you expect? You know, we're in Olympic year. We've seen it's tough to tell in terms of Olympic popularity, is because the previous Olympics were taking place during a pandemic. What do you expect with her participation and then her to have an effect on the WNBA and beyond? Do you see, I mean, granted the Olympics are in Paris, there's a tape delay. What do you expect in terms of her involvement? I assume she's going to be on the Olympic team just because of her participation in the past or because of her playing career. What do you expect of the Olympic effect on the W?
I think the powers that be will try very hard to get her on the team. I think that might actually cause some friction because, you know, she might supplant a W All-Star or someone who's won an Olympic medal, you know? So, I mean, she is the newcomer coming in. I think she would probably be the only, you know, college player on that team. That being said, there's no question that I think more people would watch the games if she was on the team just because of this incredible moment we're in. You know, it would be fascinating. I think it might actually make NBC decide to televise more of those games, or put them in primetime. So I think that's another pretty important consideration, especially because, you know, let's face it, the women's team is incredible. You know, they've got this pile of gold medals, but they also have to compete for attention with the men's team, which is just as incredible. And so having a name and a phenomenon like Clark on the team, I think, could only help draw more attention to the rest of the fantastic players on that women's team.
No, totally agree. Rachel, this has been a fantastic chat. Thank you for spending some time with us. Can you please let our audience know where they can find you on social media and then any other projects you're working on for the rest of the year as well?
Sure. My Twitter handle, where I spend most of my time, unfortunately, is BoxScore, and that's spelled BACHSCORE. And I'll be spending my time. I'm going to be preparing for the Olympics, and I'll be at the WNBA draft on Monday.
Great. I hope you enjoyed the draft. I heard a new format. I think fans for the first time will be allowed to attend. Is that correct?
Yeah, first time in a while anyway. First I think time in a while. Done in the past, but it's not for years. So yeah, it's at the Brooklyn Academy of Music in Brooklyn, a big performance space, and should be pretty fun.
Great. Thank you very much, Rachel. Much appreciated.
Thanks, Justin. Appreciate you having me on.
Thank you for listening to Hoopsology, presented by Boss Life. If you have comments or questions about this episode, please email hoopsologypod@gmail.com. Also, leave us a review on iTunes and follow us on all social media platforms.